Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, November 21st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this Tuesday edition of the show. Sports Cheetah will join us from WagerTalk.com. Be good to get him back on the program here to talk rivalry week in college football. A couple of things I want to point out here before we start recording with Cheetah. The first is that obviously we had a lot of problems with our Monday show. Had problems recording with Cheetah on Monday night as well. So this is a little bit shorter of a show here with Cheetah. He's got some traveling and whatnot to do here for the Thanksgiving holiday. So just wanted to make sure that we got this wrapped up, got something squared away for the Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. As always, we've got great content for you to check out over there. My college football power ratings, bunch of game previews, all that type of stuff. So wanted to get something up here for this Tuesday show and then get Cheetah on his way. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and bring on Mr. Sports Cheetah here for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Cheetah, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, you know, I've had better Mondays. I'll put it that way. And of course, we are recording this Tuesday show here on Monday evening, but we'll try to make the best of it and do the best we can here. And hopefully things will get back to normal as we go throughout the week. But Cheetah, it is rivalry week, hate week, whatever you want to call it. And I've heard people with different opinions on this point of view, and I want to ask you about this here. A lot of people will adjust their power ratings because these are rivalry games, expecting that, you know, the underdogs come to play, or, you know, the favorites should bring a pretty good effort. Do you make any adjustments for rivalry week?
I don't. I didn't know people did, to be honest. So, I mean, they're having a rivalry like this week against Stanford, not because it was a rivalry. My number was 13 and it was, you know, 16. So it's a nice bonus, I guess, just because it does seem like historically rivalry games tend to play closer. But it's never something that I'm actually adjusting my numbers to account for, because I don't think it's ultimately quantifiable. So yeah, I don't do it, but if it's like, you know, what's the example, Auburn, Alabama, you're getting 4.5 with Auburn and you like that, you think the numbers should be lower. And then it's also a nice bonus. It is a rivalry game and it's a, and possibly the SEC in a college football playoff spot. So, I think when it comes down to it, whether they're a favorite or a dog, it's a rivalry game and both teams are going to be showing up and focused to take it down and, you know, give their best effort. So I don't know if there's really much of an advantage giving the dog like more effort points than, you know, you would a favorite.
Well, and I think too, I mean, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure a little bit if you're adjusting your numbers, because then you're just going to be off from the market. I mean, the market's not adjusting its numbers. And you can see that when you look around at the lines for these rivalry games, they are power ratings based. And if there are narratives or other things that people want to factor in, then the odds makers just let the betting market do that and let the number kind of go as it may. So I don't think it's a great idea to make any adjustments. I certainly don't want to, you know, besmirch whatever people do that they have success with, but I didn't make any adjustments to my numbers this week. And, you know, I think actively making yourself farther away from what the market's going to say is just going to, you know, skew your point of view in a way that, you know, probably hurts you in the long run.
Yeah, it totally could. And there's probably some like recency bias or recency trend stuff with, say like BYU, Utah, for the majority of the years of the last decade that they've played, you know, all their games, no matter who the favorite or dog is, go down to the final possession. And that's just kind of been a thing for a while. And so people just remember that. And so they probably, you know, assume, oh, it's going to be close and I'm getting Cal over 2 touchdowns. That shouldn't be the reason that you're ultimately making bets, whether it's rivalry week or not.
All right, so with that rivalry week angle, you know, you've got teams that are still playing for bowl eligibility. You've got coaching changes that obviously, you know, we've seen a couple here already with Jim Mora Jr. getting fired, and then we got some interim guys who we know aren't getting the job. What do you do this week? I mean, do you limit your exposure? Do you kind of narrow your focus? Do you avoid any situations in particular?
No, not necessarily. I will say just at first glance of every game yesterday, I haven't delved into the totals yet. They just came out a couple hours ago, so I need to do that. But as far as sides go, it'll probably be a really light week for me. I know people like to have a lot of the action for like the Fridays for college football, especially after Thanksgiving. There's going to be 12 or 13 games, I think, on the card, maybe even a couple more than that. So I'm not going to hopefully be forcing just to bet some Friday games or anything. But I went through, and honestly, there was only three or four games that stuck out. Yeah, that could end up only being all I bet as far as the sides go is a couple games, and it's nothing I'm doing on purpose. I just went through and, you know, comparing numbers and looking at some of the spots. And as far as coaching things go, I know we've talked about that a lot in the past on the show and like the Jim Mora thing now. And I don't know if you knew this, that I'm actually like a UCLA fan because I grew up down there, and they're actually my team outside of my alma mater. And so I hope they figure it out, but hard fought game against Stanford. I'm not sure I'll end up betting this game, but generally you get a really good response from the team once, you know, you've seen, at least it's been the case in recent years, where the team that fires the coach or the coach leaves has bounced back and responded well, not only to like winning games, but even against the spread. I know this year it happened in a few instances, and it was positive in Oregon State even for a while. Like they covered 3 out of 4 after Gary Anderson left. 4 out of 4, I think, maybe depending on the number you got in one of their games. But regardless, it's nothing I'm jumping out and looking for specifically to bet or not bet. But if it lines up with everything else in my numbers, then it's things and you know, it's variables that you need to include and account for.
Now, what about bowl eligibility? Is that something you feel like is already built into these numbers, especially with teams that have 5 wins?
I think it is to an extent. One thing that I've noticed over the years, I actually talked about this last week on the call-in show that I do for VSiN. I said on Monday, you know, pay attention, because I think it was the week before already clinched their 6th win. There's no actual predictor clinched their 6th win, meaning they got 6 wins and clinched a bowl game appearance. There's no predictor on whether or not they cover or not the next game. But I have noticed in the last few years that team gets bet against in the market. So how you can use that to your advantage is, if you like that team, you're going to get bet against more often than not, I've noticed. And you can get a better number later in the week. And if you like the other side, then bet it as soon as you can. A few examples off the top of my head I know were was Ohio State. Sparty, I think, had gotten their 6th win. And Ohio State moved from, 15.5, 16 up to like 18 or 19. You had there was a few. I think there was like a Navy SMU game where Navy was like +6, 6.5, moved to 3. Then the quarterback was announced out and it moved to like pick. But that one moved down and Navy had just picked up their 6th win. There was another one or two I remember talking about on the show that stood out, but they were all moves against the team that had already won their 6th game. And so it's not like a science or anything, but I have noticed that there is some sort of market influence in those spots. It's not necessarily, I think, good to blindly bet against those teams, but you can, again, if you like that side, you can maybe be patient and wait in those cases. Or if you like the other side, you know, I should probably just be betting this now because it's not going to move against me. And so that's something I've noticed as far as the bowl eligibility stuff goes. As far as 5-win teams, I haven't noticed a thing as far as like their 6th game have inflated numbers or not. Like there's generally some teams that, you know, can get it done and get the 6th win as a favorite. There's teams that lose as favorites, you know, trying to get their 6th win against the worst team. And it's just as scattered and wide range variance as anything else. So I haven't noticed much with the 5-win teams, whether it's in the market or results. But for 6 wins, results, it's probably nothing. But market wise, and at least trying to get better numbers, that is one thing I've noticed for the 6-win teams.
Now, one of the things that you have in your back pocket as a handicapper is that you've got a background in sports psychology. So I think that's one of the things to key in on here as well, is that, you know, we want to focus on the rivalry games. We want to focus on the games where teams are playing for bowl eligibility or whatever else. But there are some games here this week where neither team is playing for anything. So what do you do? Do you try to get into the mindset of both teams, figure out who's motivated? What do you do in that regard with, say, you know, you got a game like Bowling Green in Eastern Michigan on Tuesday night. Eastern Michigan open 15. It's down as low as 12.5 at bookmaker now, 13 across the board. Neither one of those teams are playing for anything. So do you sort of try to ascertain what that team's mindset is?
Yeah, I mean, you have to try. You can read, obviously, like reports as far as beat writers, what they're saying about practices during the week, or if there's just any quotes from coaches on how they're practicing or how they're preparing. Generally, I think that's really different than any other week, and you really just have to go off your numbers. So, for example, this is one that I didn't end up betting, but I agree with the move. My number is 13.5, so maybe it's a little bit – it's moved a little maybe too far now, but at 15, I'm not surprised Bowling Green took money just from the sheer number, and it is, you know, a game that plays tomorrow. It's a Tuesday game, and it's a MAC. They're not, you know, I don't think anyone's taken this game off. Eastern Michigan's played so many close games all year long. I know they've lost a lot that came down to the wire. I think three now in overtime. They're a really good team. For them, it's, I don't know, for my assessment of how they're screen is that they know they're better than their record, and they are probably really just excited to get a win in the MAC play just to say they got a win because they've had so many close losses. I just don't anticipate them being flat. And Bowling Green's just kind of come on and been a team that's, I think, been betting the market now a few weeks in a row. So they're improved, and, you know, at least from where they were last year and the beginning of this year. And so anyways, I think this one lines up pretty well. And there's no reason, I think, in this particular matchup to think that one team just doesn't care at all versus, you know, the other caring more just because neither team can make a bowl game at this point.
Now, I don't know if there are any other situations like this here this week, but you do have some spots where teams are going to know what's happening by the time they play. And one of those spots here this week is Ohio, game 123-124 between Ohio and Buffalo. If Akron wins on Tuesday night, and of course they showed as a 15-point favorite, Ohio cannot win the MAC East, which is something that they really wanted to do, and that loss to Akron was pretty surprising last week. Now, we've seen the number go from 4.5 down to 3.5 here, which I think is kind of a preemptive move based on the expectation that Akron wins that game. So does Ohio become a fade team for you at that point?
It's interesting. I probably wouldn't be betting against them blind just because of that. And we have to assume Akron's going to be Kent State at home with this opportunity. Although I don't know if, is it Cato Nelson, the backup? I'm not sure if he's playing. He looked phenomenal against Ohio. I'm not sure if he's playing, but either way, they should get the W. So this is a really weird spot for you in the sense that you have to be looking at this and looking ahead, and you shouldn't be betting the game unless you knew that this was a potential possibility, at least. And you know, normally my number would be 6. So to open 4.5 and to come down is definitely time. I probably am just going to be hurrying and betting Ohio because worst case, it's going to go up if Kent actually pulled the upset. And then in one instance, it'll go up if Kent pulls the upset. And then in worst case, I'm sitting with a number that I think short anyway. And I don't really get the idea or picture that Ohio is a team that's just going to either not try in a game because they can't win the division. They still want to get another win, and obviously they're going to go to a bowl game either way and keep up on you know the season they've had to this point. So where it would be Ohio or nothing for me, mostly just because the number is a little low. But it is one that I'm also watching that game anyways, because if Ken is going to pull this upset, the number's probably going to shoot right back up, at least to the 4.5 again. So I'm with you there. It's an interesting setup here for a MAC game that's on a Friday game that we have, I guess, as people are listening today, Tuesday. So, MAC Green game pretty closely.
Well, I apologize to our listeners out there. I know that from what it sounds like on my end, the audio is cutting out a little bit. And I know, Cheetah, you said my end was cutting out a little bit, too. We're doing the best we can here to try and patch this thing together and cobble something together. I can't tell you that next week with Cheetah, everything will sound better than it does right now. But in any event, we'll keep going here and try to make do with what we've got going on. And we did touch on this game on Monday with Kyle Hunter, and I'm sure we'll touch on it again throughout the week with guys like Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels. But this game between South Florida and Central Florida is very, very interesting to me for a lot of different reasons. UCF has not played a defense on South Florida's level. South Florida has played absolutely nobody this season. They've been a double-digit favorite in every game this year. Now they're catching 11 points against Central Florida. This one up from 9.5 to 11 on the open. Cheetah, is this going in the direction of your numbers, and do you have any thoughts on this game?
I have a lot of thoughts on this game. We could sit here and talk the whole pod about this game. So to preface all of my current situation in this particular matchup, One, I bet Tulsa money line really, really big for me last week. I had plus 24 as well, but I had a massive bet on the money line. I thought they were going to win the game. Sure enough, Luke Skipper gets injured, misses the whole second half, and they couldn't score a touchdown. They only lost by seven anyways. They shut out South Florida the whole second half. I'm really upset at South Florida, and obviously that Luke Skipper got injured. So I hate South Florida for that reason. I also have a UCF future to win the conference at 25-1. So I'm sitting in a really nice spot to just kind of say, you know, like, I'm not hedging anything. I'm just going to hold this future. But when it's all said and done, if I'm looking at this game individually, 11's too high. My number is only a touchdown, and I'm surprised to see this at 9.5 shoot up above to double digits. I get that, and I was sitting there saying during the game, like when I was kind of whining on Twitter that Tulsa's QB gets hurt or else they win that game, and you know the money line was almost 12-1. And South Florida really sucks. That's what I said on Twitter. Like Central Florida is going to win this game. But I also wasn't anticipating getting a chance at, you know, a plus 11. So if you like the South Florida side, and obviously this is a game that, despite having the one loss to Houston, if they win the division, they get to play Memphis and potentially win the AAC. No matter who, you know, this is the tiebreaker game. They're going on the road, but this is the one they've had circled their entire season. It's the one Central Florida's had circled. I'm not sure that you're really going to get, you know, one team being more motivated than the other. Central Florida has a little bit of the Scott Frost stuff on their side. I know they got bet against last week. Everyone was doing it with Temple. I said, good luck with that. I'm going to take the over 55. And luckily that was pretty easy to get cashed. And they ended up winning by like 30 anyway. So I'm not sure the Scott Frost stuff's really ultimately making a difference as far as their performance. So I wouldn't be betting against Central Florida because of that. On the flip side there, it would be just because this number at 11 is too many. And if you're a South Florida, it's probably going to be tough to play because I don't think you've really have. And Adam mentioned how weak their schedule's been. It's pretty solid. But I don't think you've really gotten an idea outside of that you had a great talent coming back and a lot of returning starters. But like, what reason do you have to trust Charlie Strong and that he's going to out X and O Scott Frost? Like, I just don't think that's ever the case. And it was one of the reasons I actually liked Montgomery with a bye week playing South Florida and Charlie Strong as a 12-1 dog. I thought, you know, they're going to have 2 weeks to prep for the South Florida offense. As bad as the Tulsa defense is, I think they're going to keep them in check. And plus 24, that's going to be obviously a bet. But I like the money line because I think Tulsa wins this game way more often than, you know, the 1 out of 13 times. And a lot of added with the coaching edge. And here's another huge coaching edge, I think, for Central Florida versus South Florida. So it's a really tough, I guess, spot to really gauge all the different variables and make a decision. If I didn't have the 25-1 that I'm just going to let ride, to have some money, I think, on plus 11, and I may end up betting it anyways, just because the discrepancy in the number is too high. But I don't love it enough that it would be like a really big play or anything anyways, because, again, I think Scott Frost is a much better coach. Central Florida is the better team at this point, and you know, at least a level offensively that I think you know, is going to be up there with any team in the country this year potentially. So I, if you have a lean or anything on your end, I'd recommend to people plus 11, but then I'm sitting here, I'm going to be rooting for Central Florida all week and during the game. So it's a tough spot, but if you were looking at this, you're like, wow, 11 seems high. You are right. I think it's definitely the play if you're going to make one.
Yeah, my power ratings, I have this game at 9. So I was pretty much right there at the opener, and I'm not surprised to see it go up because you and I have talked about this at various points throughout the season here that Central Florida takes money every single week. Somebody is hitting their opener every week without fail, and they've done that for the last 2 years now. So I guess I'm not all that surprised to see it go up, but I will be a little bit surprised if we continue to get sharp involvement as limits get higher throughout the week. Because if your number is 7, you know, you're one of the sharpest guys I know. My number is 9, so I kind of split the difference there between your number and what's out there in the market. I'd be surprised to see this thing keep going up. I mean, I don't know if you get public involvement on Central Florida. That's certainly a possibility. But that's what I'm curious to see is Wednesday, Thursday, and then on into Friday, of course, where does this number go? I think that's going to be a pretty good indicator for us.
You know, another indicator I think that is, I failed to mention, it was, and another reason I like Tulsa, was that they may have been looking ahead to this game themselves. This is like their huge whatever, and they knew they were huge favorites against Tulsa. And so the fact that they did play Tulsa close, and it required the backup quarterback for Tulsa not being able to do anything in the second half for South Florida to hang on and at least not go to overtime, that might be telling in the sense that South Florida was this game, which is another positive if you like the South Florida side. So I am very intrigued, like you are, to see where this number goes in the market all week.
All right, well, we'll stay on Friday here, and let's talk Texas Tech and Texas a little bit here. Texas Tech, with a win, would get to a bowl game. Texas picked up their sixth win last week. So, you know, we'll see if we see that that fade that you were alluding to earlier on in the show about those teams that pick up their sixth wins. I have this number down below a touchdown, and part of it is because this Texas Tech defense, again, they don't jump out all that much statistically, but relative to how they've been the last few years, David Gibbs is doing a great job with this Red Raiders defense. Now, there are a couple of questions about these five-win teams. And like I said, sometimes you get, you know, a little bit of a you have to pay a little bit of a premium in the market. But sometimes these teams with five wins just don't really want to go to a bowl game. They don't want the extra practice. They just kind of want the season to be over. And also sometimes going to a bowl will save a coach's job. And I kind of wonder if that's the spot here with the Red Raiders with Cliff Kingsbury. Seems like they like him. You know, obviously, if you like offense, you like playing for him. But I'm very curious to see, you know, how Texas Tech actually comes out in this game.
Yeah, I'm intrigued too, because I have them in a stock market league where I sold them at 5.5 wins, and meaning I need them to win less than 5.5 to make any money, and they're sitting at 5. And this is for a bowl game. So is the TCU game. I think they're really strange last week, because you had not only TCU starting injured and then announced out for the season, but then Kenny Hill randomly was hurt with an undisclosed injury and didn't even travel to Lubbock. And that number came down under a touchdown, although I think people backed TCU a little bit on game day. But on top of the fact that TCU's defense against the pass, which is all Texas Tech can really do, is really, really good, top three to top five in all the metrics, plus mile per hour wins all day. So we'd actually bet the under. And fortunately, it was pretty easy because of the wind conditions, and only got 3 points. I don't even think they got a garbage touchdown at the end. So that was their best chance, I think, at getting that win to get to a bowl game, because I don't imagine they're going to be a five-win team getting in. So this one now, coming off of the game where you could only score 3 in your last home game of the season, which was potentially maybe Cliff Kingsbury's last coach, and you just get embarrassed like that. Granted, the conditions stunk. You know, it's the Texas defense is really, really strong. They're very similar to TCU. They're really good against the pass, really solid against the run. They're not quite as good, but a lot of their stats are skewed from that weird week one Maryland game where Maryland dropped like 60 in the first coached game from, you know, Herman and Todd Orlando, as well as the defensive coordinator for Texas. So since then, like, they've just been an elite defense. I just think it's going to be really similar to last game. Not quite as bad, but they're not going to just score 3, because I think the wind contributed a lot to that. But I think the number is actually pretty fair. I think a lot of people, I had a friend that was messaging me, actually, and I just pulled it up here. He's a Texas Tech, like, alum, I think, slash fan. He was at the game against TCU, but he's like, the line looks short to me, and which I thought was interesting, because I don't think the line's too high or too low. I think it's spot on. He thinks Texas rolls, but he basically said that people are done with Cliff Kingsbury as head coach. They're done with where Texas Tech football's been for a few years. The attitude and just like the aura around the program is really down and really just poor and annoying, I think was the word that he used. And so he thinks there's going to be a change, and he just doesn't even think they show up. So for whatever that's worth, coming from the Texas Tech crowd there, right, who he lives right there, I think it's too tough to back Texas Tech in this spot. Especially, I think Ellinger was back and played for Texas last week. I didn't follow that game. I didn't have action, but I remember seeing his name, and that's really positive for them and their offense. And, you know, Texas Tech's defense is still, granted, they are better this year, like you mentioned. It's sad to say that they're a lot better and improved. They are, but they're still not very good. You know, they're still below average. So for me at 10, I think it's a total stay away. I don't think I'll end up having action in the game. If I looked at anything, maybe an underplay. But with Ellinger back, I think Texas offense is going to be scoring a few more points a game. So my number is probably going to be end up being around the 55, 54s that are in the market.
And that is a big question about those five-win teams. You know, do they want to keep playing? Do they want to keep that coach around? And I'm glad that we got somebody's point of view who's in tune with the program and knows what's going on in the area there. And again, I mean, that's so important, whether it's a beat writer, whether it's somebody in your network that can help you out with that type of information. You know, having that in your back pocket is very, very important, to say the least. Preston, let's talk about this Cal-UCLA game real quickly here. Jim Mora Jr. relieved of his duties, deservedly so. That guy squandered a lot of talent there in L.A. Cal is a team that I know you've loved throughout the season. You really like the coaching upgrade with Justin Wilcox. Love the way that this defense has played. So with you being somebody that follows UCLA pretty closely, I mean, was that their game last week? Are they interested in going to some throwaway bowl game, you know, on December 20th or whenever it's going to be? Do we get an effort from the Bruins here?
So without knowing, I'm going to be checking, actually. So they are 5-6. I actually didn't know if they had 6 wins or 5. So this is probably for the bowl game. It's crazy. They're actually 0-6 on the road and 5-0 at home this year. So they're at home. Haven't lost at home yet. Cal's just really, really good because they changed the way that they approached, you know, playing football. When a lot of teams are going fast and trying to score as many points as they can, Cal's defense was so bad they couldn't keep up anyways, and their offense was okay. But they just, especially in a Pac-12 conference where it's more high flying and the defenses that are really solid, they play a very similar style to Stanford now, and it keeps them in games. And you know, they were tied with USC, and even they lost that game. There have been other games that they've lost, and even the Stanford one, they only lost by 3 last week. They just play a really good brand of football that I think works well in a Pac-12 where most teams are trying to do the opposite. And you know, here's another one where you have a Cal team that's going to play more game control and run the ball against the UCLA defense that can't defend the run very well. Granted, they did wake up in that second half against USC, and USC couldn't run the ball as well. But other teams have scored 30, 40, 50 points on UCLA this season. So for me, my only look would be Cal, just because I think, and like you mentioned, I've just liked them all year long and backed them quite a bit. But with Mora leaving, and I think I mentioned it when we were talking about coaches and stuff, generally, that's a good spot to back the team when they're getting the new coach, the playing for the interim guy, or just playing for the fact that there's a breath of fresh air in the program, the university, you know, the area where the city. It's a tough. So those kind of contradict, I guess. And when it comes down to it, I looked at my number just now. It's exactly 7.5, the raw number in this game. So I don't see myself ever getting involved in this game. Unless it somehow got steamed up to like 10, then I'm taking Cal for sure. Or if it got down, you know, to like 4 or something, then I got to take UCLA. I don't envision that happening either direction. So it's probably a pretty fair line. And, you know, I just have to pass on the game ultimately.
This is a slippery slope, but I'm going to go ahead and go down it, because at this point, with the day that I've had on Monday and all the audio issues and all that, I don't have too many F's left to give. How invested is Josh Rosen in more practices and taking hits in a bowl game? Like, I mean, this is a guy who's taken a beating at UCLA. He's been hurt a lot behind a porous offensive line. Like, not to say that he's going to throw the game or anything like that, because I don't think that he's going to, and I don't want our listeners to think that. But also, on the human side of things here, I mean, he's got a future to think about at the next level. So would that be something that crosses your mind here in a handicap like this?
People are going to listen to my stuff regularly. They're going to remember. I don't know if it was on your show, but I definitely did it when Gil was doing conference previews, and I talked about it on my own stuff at Podcast U or even just on Twitter some, because I wanted to kind of be controversial about it. But I said before the season, when people were betting UCLA over 6.5 wins and it got up to 7, 7.5, I ended up betting under 7.5. And I said, when it comes down to it, unless this UCLA team is like 9-2, 10-1, like just an elite team this year, which we had no reason to believe that would be the case, I said, why would Josh Rosen even bother playing in the games with a tweaked ankle late in the year? And he did sit out a game a couple weeks ago, and he actually has come back, which I was slightly surprised to see that he even bothered, because he has so much more now. He could potentially be the number one pick in the draft. He's going to make a lot of money. Why would you even risk at this point, unless you have a chance to get to a bowl game, which is the exact spot they've been in, where they got that 5th win his first game back, and they had 2 tries, meaning USC and now Cal, to get to 6 and get to a bowl. So one, I'm actually I'm impressed that he didn't just take the last 3 weeks off and he's only focused on the NFL, where I think it tells a little bit about his character to a degree. And I don't know much about the guy, or I've never talked to anyone about him, but from the sense of, you know, where he's going to, like last year, this is kind of what I was getting at. I think this will be a thing. And the way what I called it before the season was Spurs or Greg Popovich-esque, where you just rest guys. I think that's going to be something that's more common in college football now, where you had Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette last year sitting out bowl games just because they didn't care and they wanted to play in the NFL. And that's fine. They have that choice. But I think that's going to become more and more common. Well, what this told me was that Josh Rosen wants to get his team to a bowl game, cares about the program enough. And honestly, now that Moore is gone, I'd be surprised if he didn't play. I think you're kind of though on to some. There is a storyline to what's the point of even playing this game or the bowl game if you're Josh Rosen. If he does play, he's not going to be trying to throw the game at all. No, that won't be a thing. But I think if he ended up getting scratched because of a tweaked something, it also wouldn't surprise me either. So if that's the case, hopefully the line will drop way down and the numbers will adjust everywhere.
All right, let's go into Saturday here and hit on a few of these games. And again, I hope the audio is good for our listeners. And if it's not, I really do apologize for that. Let's look at game 153-154 here. Ohio State up in the Big House to take on that team up north. And this number opened 10, up into the 11, 11.5, 12 range. The Buckeyes, you know, I mean, if things work out for them, they're supposed to win this game. They're supposed to beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. If things work out, you know, they've got themselves set up to be in the Final Four, which is probably going to piss a lot of people off with a two-loss team up there in Ohio State. But how are you seeing this game here, Preston?
I think the number's too high, to be completely honest. I figured it would come in because Michigan, they've been injured a lot this year, and they obviously don't have Spates, been the quarterback going in. They've been starting, I think it's Peters is his name, the third string. Then they just decided to go with him anyway, Brandon Peters. But he left last game. He got hurt, and now he's questionable against Ohio State. Spade's out. So now you're just looking at O'Korn, who'd been so bad for a few games for them. And then, honestly, I think when Peters went out, they had a lead against Wisconsin. And then O'Korn went in, and Wisconsin ended up winning, I think, from O'Korn on, like 20-3 or something like that. Or maybe it was 17-3. So, obviously, that's very important. If Brandon Peters is playing, he gives Michigan a little bit more of a dynamic that's helpful than O'Korn can. And so paying attention to that. The fact that it's gone up right away makes me think he's not playing and that it'll just be O'Korn again, where they've just, again, been so poor on offense. He turns it over more often. It's a completely different team. And, you know, their defense is really strong and solid, but you can only do so much. Like the Michigan State game comes to my mind when he turned it over 5 times. And in the second half, the Michigan defense didn't let Michigan State even get a first down. They still lost the game, whatever, 14-10, because O'Korn threw 5 interceptions. So it's a really tough spot, I think, to even back Michigan, even though the number is too high. If Peters plays, I might actually jump in. He's also kind of their future guy. Well, he's a freshman. I'm not sure if they have another guy that's redshirting that maybe is going to be the future. But if it is him, then they're probably going to be in why bother mode of, like, risking – whatever this injury is that he's questionable with. So I have no clue. Honestly, it's a really tough game to analyze outside of that, because the quarterback, I think, makes such a big difference. But the number is high if Peters plays. If he doesn't play, then it actually, I think, is pretty fair, which then comes down to your question early on. Well, it's a rivalry game, you know? Like, you're getting double digits in Michigan, Ohio State. How do you not take Michigan? Ohio State is playing, granted. I think, yeah, I would disagree. You're not allowed to give up 55 and lose to Iowa by 100. Not 100, but whatever it was, 30 points, 31 points, because and get in with another loss at home by 16 and get into the playoff. Like, that's just not supposed to happen. And things are breaking down now. That could happen. It could come down to where it's Ohio State or two-loss Oklahoma or two-loss TCU. Or potentially like a one-loss Alabama if they lose this week and don't even get into the SEC title game. You could have two-loss USC still, I think, in there. So Ohio State's going to have, if there is a two-loss team, push for the playoff in a fourth spot. And, you know, they're going to have a slight, you know, chance at that. And I'd still think they're taking Bama at 11-1 before Ohio State at 10-2. But depends on how some of the other things shake out. So all Ohio State can do in this game is go out and try to win by as many points as possible and put up as many points as they possibly can and just make as, you know, make it as good of a showing as they can. So I'm not going to say, you know, because the number is a little high and it's very dependent on the Michigan quarterback. But I'm also not going to tell you to obviously back the rivalry game, the hate game, because they're getting double digit points, because Ohio State is going to be trying their best to just crush and win this game by as many points as possible. Because, and I think we saw it, and I think it was Rufus Peabody was doing, he was doing college football playoff committee, like analysis and projections with his, he realized last week when Georgia dropped, they had projected Georgia dropping from 1 to number 3 with their road loss to Auburn. And they actually dropped from 1 to number 6. And he said, we had undervalued how much the committee weighing margin of defeat, because Georgia was down, I think they were down 30. They did score at the end. So I think they lost by 23 at Auburn. But he says the fact that they lost by 23 was weighed a lot more on the committee's minds or hands, whatever, than we had anticipated, which means winning by more points and margin of victory is going to be weighed more than I think maybe we had previously anticipated. So games or teams that are on the fringe, whether it's Ohio State or USC or whoever it could be, they need to win these games by as many points as possible. Like, style points do matter, especially if it is a rivalry game on the road against a solid, you know, top 20 Michigan team. They're going to go out and try to run it up. And Urban Meyer's never had a problem doing that anyway. So this game's really intriguing to me. But, again, I'm not going to be putting any money on it until I hear about the quarterback situation.
Well, before we move on from this game, I'd just like to remind everybody that the spot was good in last year's game. All right, let's go to game 173-174 and also game 175-176, because these two fall into the same boat. North Texas is a 13-point favorite against Rice. Florida Atlantic, 21.5-point favorite against Charlotte. North Texas and Florida Atlantic have much bigger things to worry about next week. So what do you do in a spot like this where North Texas and Florida Atlantic are both vastly superior to the opponents that they're playing, but really not a whole lot of incentive for them here? And also you could see a lot of underclassmen in the second half. So what do you do in situations like that?
Yeah, you have to be looking at it for sure. I'm not sure – Florida Atlantic, I mean, they can go undefeated, I think, in conference if they win this Charlotte game. And they're going to win, but you're right. Like, if they are up 21 late or in the fourth quarter or even 24 or 28, you know, Charlotte's going to have that chance to backdoor. And it could be a lot of senior upperclassmen that aren't normally starters playing. I like the North Texas angle better because they're off a pretty hard-fought win against Army that – fourth, and I know North Texas was either up or tied the majority of the game, and they finally scored last. They played well enough where they knew, hey, we have to have the ball last, and so they let Army tie it with like a minute left at 49, and then they went and kicked the field goal. And so they're coming off that game, and this game is a lot. It means a lot less to them because I don't think they are undefeated in conference. That's only Florida Atlantic, and they're going to be winning the division anyways and playing Florida Atlantic in the conference title. So. For me, it would be, I think, a very worthwhile angle to look at if you like the Rice side and the number made sense anyways, at least for North Texas because of where they're at. Florida Atlantic, they crushed their quote-unquote rival, Florida International. I don't know if that even counts. They didn't even really have to try in the second half. Charlotte, they're not going to have to try, but they could easily just run it up on accident against a team like Charlotte anyways because Charlotte's so bad. So this one for me, I think you're staying away from Florida Atlantic. I wouldn't just be blindly betting against them. But I think the spot for North Texas is pretty bad here just because of kind of what happened last week in a pretty physical, you know, matchup against an option team that really wears you down. And you got the win, which is great for them. Now you have to play Rice, who you don't even care about, before you're going to play Florida Atlantic anyway. So I do like the Rice angle more than I would Florida Atlantic Charlotte.
All right, let's go to game 181-182 here. We're just going to try and hit as many of these games as possible and talk about some of these different angles, because this is a good one between UNLV and Nevada. Now, Nevada, 2.5-point or 3-point favorite, depending on where you look out there in the marketplace. They are 2-9. UNLV is 5-6. So UNLV has the opportunity to go to a bowl game. Nevada with the chance to play spoiler. I know I just called them Nevada and Nevada in the same blurb there. But the Wolfpack have the chance to play spoiler in this spot. So is that an angle that you look for in these rivalry games?
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to – I mean, they'll love to do it, and they're favored for a reason, and it's moved up to, I think, 3 from 2, 2.5. Nevada's played really, really well lately. There was something clicked after I think it was the Washington State game. They lost to Idaho State. They got crushed by Washington State. Then they went on the road to Fresno State and actually played a pretty good game. Then they won one of their wins this week. This year was against Hawaii. They won that game. Then they went on the road to Colorado State. They only lost by two. They scored 42 at Colorado State. And I was like, holy cow, like Nevada's – they figured out that they had implemented this new offense brand new before the year, and it just took them some time. It took 2 months. That's fine. That happens. They lost to Air Force, but they scored 42. They lost by three. They went into Boise State. They were winning the game like 14-0, I think, or it was 14-3 maybe. Yeah, I think it was 14-3, and Boise State – scored 38 unanswered and ended up covering. But Nevada had three drives in the fourth quarter where they were inside the Boise 40 and got zero, and they actually would have covered the game had they not thrown one interception and then just gone for it on fourth downs and failed. They crushed San Jose State like they're supposed to, but, I mean, they did win by 45. Like, they weren't 45-point favorites. Then at San Diego State, they were down five in the fourth quarter. They were winning in the first half for a lot of that game. And then San Diego State scored the last 14 late, and it landed 19. But that has been a really, really good team that's kind of flying under the radar. So I think a lot of people look at this and see UNLV getting three against a 2-9 team. And plus, it's a rivalry kind of matchup. So the better team, you'd think, or the better record at least, is getting three. And you just saw, Rodgers go nuts at New Mexico if you were watching Friday night, college football late. I think UNLV is going to be a popular pick. I actually like Nevada quite a bit at the 2.5, which is where it is still in town, but it's starting to touch three a few spots offshore. So for me, it's Nevada or nothing.
All right, let me actually backtrack on the card here because I meant to talk about this game and then I forgot to because I got excited to talk Conference USA. Game 165-166, Louisville takes on Kentucky. Louisville 9.5, 10-point favorite here. And here you've got a pretty significant revenge angle when it comes to a rivalry game. Louisville last year, I mean, I'm sure you were sweating out that Lamar Jackson Heisman Trophy prop. He was not particularly good in this game against Kentucky last year. So this is a pretty interesting one with that revenge angle in play.
It is. I don't know if I'll end up playing it, but if I did, it would be Louisville just because they've looked better the last few weeks. They had a few weeks in a row where they'd lost the Boston College game, then they upset Florida State, then they lost to I'm forgetting who it was. They lost two out of three games, and people thought they were kind of falling off, giving up. The defense didn't look very good at all. They lost to NC State a few weeks before that, too. So they're already like a three-loss team. Well, they've put it together, and they've beat teams they're supposed to beat. And now they are supposed to beat Kentucky. Kentucky team that – and I was actually talking to Matt Lindemann, who's a Kentucky fan, like one of the only Kentucky football fans there is. And he, a few weeks back, he says, I don't think – so I liked Kentucky against Vanderbilt. My bet it's smaller, but and they ended up rolling. And it was more an anti-Vanderbilt play. He didn't even think they were going to win that game. And the Georgia one last week, they obviously lost that. But he's like, I don't think we're going to win another game this year. He's like, our defense is just really, really bad. It gets worse every week. And for some reason, our offense – isn't as good as it was a year ago. So he actually really liked Ville on this spot, and I imagine he'll end up playing him, laying the 9.5, and it's still 10 a few spots. I don't know if I'll end up doing it because it does seem like the number's a little high. Mine was only 8, so I'm not sure I'm laying 10 when my number's 8 because of a spot in a something situation. I don't think I'm doing that, but for people that do like Kentucky again, because they're like, oh, they beat them outright on the road last year, and now they're getting 10 at home, I'd be a little bit careful. I'm not sure Kentucky is just as good of a team that they were, at this point last season.
All right, let's go to the Apple Cup here. Game 183-184, Washington State takes on Washington. With an upset win here, Washington State would go to the Pac-12 title game because they beat Stanford, and they'd have the head-to-head tiebreaker over them. If Washington wins, Stanford goes to the Pac-12 title game because Washington – lost to Stanford earlier on this year. So, this is one where you've got a whole lot of things going on here. I mean, you've got a berth in the conference championship game on the line. You've got, a rivalry matchup where these two teams, certainly don't like each other very much. And, you also have a spot where, unlike a lot of past editions, both of these teams are really good. Usually Washington's been pretty decent. You go back to the Jake Locker days. Washington State wasn't all that good. Here, these are two top 10 or top 15 teams, yet Washington State still opened a double-digit dog in this one.
Yeah, and it came right back down, obviously, to 9 from like an 11 opener. As it probably should have. My number is 8.5, so that was a good snag, I think, if you got it, not because it's a rivalry game and you're getting double digits, but because 11 was too many points, and even 10 was too many points. So I think that was a good bet if you snagged it. I will say, so I'm a Washington fan because I have Stanford at 12-1 to win the Pac-12, so I need Washington State to lose. So I don't see myself getting involved because I already have action on the game. My number is 8.5, and now it's 9 in the market. So there's just not enough there for me to jump at anything. But I was what's the word, disappointed, but I had no reason to be. I didn't have a bet in the game. But, I mean, Utah gave this away. It's Washington maybe shouldn't have even won the game anyways, but I mean, they were laying 17.5, and just I mean, they probably should have lost the game to Utah. And Utah had so many chances late to seal it on a couple fourth downs up 7. Then when they did give up the touchdown, they didn't try on offense, and then the whole timeout blunder at the end that gave Washington a chance to just kick a field goal instead of going to overtime. It hasn't been very good when they've played anyone decent. Other than Utah, you'd say the best team they played is Stanford. They lost to them on the road. Arizona State's probably not even as good as Utah. They randomly lost to them on the road and only scored 7. It's just been this weird kind of – it was bitten from playing nobody for 8 weeks or 7 weeks, whatever it was, until they finally played ASU. It wasn't even that great anyway. But they just now they're playing pretty good teams, and they just aren't playing at the level they're really capable of or probably rated to be. And maybe that is a nice wake-up call, the Stanford-Utah. Now they go in and they take care of business here. But I just don't think they're at a point where they can beat good teams by more than 10 anyway. So they just aren't doing it. Or they're losing outright, or they're home as 17.5-point favorites and getting lucky to win late. Like, I don't know. For me, it's – you have to play Wazoo, I think, if you want action on the game because it is a rivalry game. Because Washington hasn't shown us anything that makes us think they can run away with a game, period, let alone, you know, cover a spread like, 9, 10, 11 points.
All right, let's slide down the board here, and I really want to hit on this game. Game 201-202, Boise State and Fresno State out in the Mountain West. Boise State, touchdown favorite in this one. And Fresno State's a team that's kind of been regressing in power ratings here for the last 3 or 4 weeks. But what's really interesting about this game is that it means virtually nothing because these two teams play each other again next week in the Mountain West Conference Championship game, no matter what happens in this one. Boise State's already in. Fresno State has the head-to-head tiebreaker over San Diego State. So, I mean, is this a game you completely stay away from? Do you think this game means more to one team than the other? Because I have to think they're going to hold some stuff back in the playbook here to, you know, keep some things hidden for film study. Fascinating spot, though.
Yeah, you get one of these every few seasons where, like, well, these teams are going to play in a week, or maybe it's 2 weeks for them. I don't remember if they get a week off. But regardless, it's basically I think it happened is Stanford, UCLA a few years back in the Pac-12. UCLA crushed Stanford in the last week, but it was meaningless. It didn't matter. And then Stanford, took care of business and won by 20-something in the actual Pac-12 championship game, which is the only one they cared about. And so you might see that where – and I think in the situation back then, UCLA had to win the game. So that was a little bit different where here, you know, Boise or Fresno, no matter who loses, they're still going to the championship. So I'm pretty sure it's weird and it's kind of scary to even bother picking a side. Where I think that maybe there's an angle, both offenses should just run it up the middle every play. For 60 minutes and then leave, and whoever gets the field goal or breaks the run wins 7-3. I'd like under 48.5. I know it was 50 opener moved down today a little bit already, but these offenses aren't going to be opening up the playbook at all, and they have no reason to. And the defenses are just going to do their thing. I expect this and anticipate it's just going to be a slow, lower scoring game just because the offenses aren't going to be doing anything tricky now. Maybe Boise running up the middle is going to be really effective and they score 35. You know, that'll stink if you bet under 48.5. But, I don't envision that. Fresno State's defense has been, like, year long. So I think under is the angle in a spot like this rather than messing with the side.
All right, this game's kind of big. The Iron Bowl, 225-226 on the board. Alabama takes on Auburn. Alabama, 4-point favorite at some shops. Bovada's at 5. Obviously, that's not a big surprise with how public in nature that book is. Two questions. One, were you surprised to see the number open where it did? And two, where do you think this number goes throughout the week?
Well, I know it opened 3.5 at Pinnacle. It was the only game Pinnacle was listing. before it even opened at BetOnline or at Chris. And a few hours after that, I know Westgate had 4. And then everyone else opened, and it kind of just found its way up to 4.5, which is surprising to me. Yeah, because my number is more like 3 for 1. And feels like if there's ever a time that – I'm trying to – so I got in an argument with someone about this. I don't think he's listening, so I feel bad bringing it up, but I don't think he'll listen. So he said, oh, it'll be like one of the biggest public plays ever. And I said, I don't know about that. I was kind of just being nice. I didn't really agree with it. But he just kept kind of going on. I was like, well, all right, well, here it is. So Georgia was one of the most public sides we've seen in a while. It's crazy to think this. They were laying points at Auburn, like 2.5, 3. It was like that was a thing, right until right before kick. And everyone that bet Georgia, so they'll remember how bad they got whooped when Auburn was up 40-10 in the fourth late. And, I mean, they just had no chance. So a lot of those same people would be the ones backing Alabama here, yet they remember a short memory. Oh no, that didn't go very well last week, and now we got to lay 4.5 instead of 2.5 or 3. I don't anticipate this actually being much of a public sharp split game. I think there's going to be kind of action on both sides, and to see this around 4.5, I think it's a little high, maybe like a point, but it doesn't shock me regardless. But trying to predict where this will go is tough for me because in my head and what I had talked to my buddy about was. I think there's going to be a lot of people that would normally back Alabama on a short number because it's Alabama, right? But those are a lot of the same people that backed Georgia a few weeks ago against Auburn. And now there's going to be a lot of those people who are like, oh, Auburn was so good. Oh, they're getting 4.5 now against Alabama, who hasn't actually looked very good themselves and hasn't really beat anyone you'd say was a top team yet this year. So I have this hunch that Auburn might end up being this like public home dog when everyone thinks Alabama's at a short number would be really public. And I have no clue. I couldn't tell you which direction this number goes. I can tell you that my number's 3. It's 4, 4.5 in the market, and it's a little bit high. But when it's all said and done, it's nothing I'm betting. I have Auburn futures to win the SEC and to win it all. So I'm just riding those and hoping they get the outright win and I can celebrate some.
My number's 5. I'm actually surprised to hear that your number is 3. I mean, I would certainly defer to your numbers, but it feels to me like Auburn's just kind of snuck up on people throughout the year where all of a sudden you kind of had them in your top 3, top 4 in your power ratings. And you're like, wait a minute, that team? Like, you know, because they probably started, what, 9th, 10th, 11th, something like that in your power ratings before the year. But now they've worked their way up to the point where they're at a respectable number against Alabama, who, as you and I talked about earlier on in the year, I mean, we've set new heights in our power ratings for Alabama over the last 2 years. So I'm surprised to hear your numbers only at a field goal.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I was the only team I bet that was like a legitimate, I thought I had a real shot at winning the national championship that I put a future bet in for was Auburn at 32-1. And after they lost to Clemson, I added 75-1. So they were always like a top team for me. They got forgotten because they blew that 20-point lead to LSU. They gave up, I think, 21 in a row and lost on the punt return. And they lost by 1. And the way it's set up, it was so nicely that Georgia and Alabama kept winning because now Auburn gets in anyways. But after that, they were like upwards of 100-1, but they were still always a top team. And so, I mean, and dogs at home to Georgia, I think that was just a mistake from 2 weeks ago. They honestly should have been a short favorite. And so, I mean, to that result. So I honestly didn't adjust them much because the market closed Georgia minus 2, 2.5 or whatever it was. And I had Auburn a favorite. I thought the actual performance or the game itself was telling. So I just left it as I had it. I'm not down on Georgia at all. It just Auburn's a little bit, I had it a little bit worse than Georgia in my power ratings. And so at home, they're going to be a favorite, obviously. So anyways, I just didn't adjust anything and I've had Auburn pretty high all year long. That's just kind of where I've been with them. You know, I thought what was also telling is they were laying 15.5 on the road at Texas A&M. Like that tells you how strong of like a market team or like a power rating, you know, wise, like where that team is held in regard. They were laying over 2 touchdowns at A&M, and they were up, I think, 22 or 25 and gave up 10 in a row or 7 at the end, and ended up landing 15, I believe. But regardless, like, that was telling to where people perceive Auburn, but then somehow I was wrong because the next week they were dogs 3-point dogs, 2.5-point dogs at Georgia. But it's not like A&M's bad. It was crazy to me. And Starkle was back at quarterback that game and everything. So I think Auburn's just, yeah, they've kind of been underrated all year long, and I've been trying to, you know, beat the drum, and I hope they can get this one done and at least get a chance to maybe hedge off some of my 75-1 and in that SEC title game.
Alabama was a 25-point favorite at Texas A&M, which, I mean, they didn't come close to covering the number in that game, but man, it's interesting to compare some of those numbers here as we go throughout the season. One more game I want to ask you about, Cheetah, and I apologize for this because I'm sure you don't want to talk about it. I know you liked BYU last week against UMass, and
yeah,
they're just a disaster here this year. But they go out to Hawaii here, game 229-230, the last one on the board. BYU is laying largely a field goal across the market, number down a little bit from 3.5. I mean, is this a business trip? Is this a free vacation to Hawaii? How do you think the Cougars show in this game?
It's interesting because you asked me this question, I believe, I think it was before they played San Jose State, and I had basically said, because their season was over, they lost to ECU, and they couldn't make it to a bowl. And I said, you know, a lot of the coaches are playing for their jobs. They're not going to just be, you know, unprepared. They're going to be organized. They're going to practice hard. They're going to get the kids to execute. And they covered and they beat San Jose State. Then they went on the road at Fresno State, who's been really good. Tanner Mangum hurts his Achilles, and they had to put in backups again, which has been the story for half the season anyways. They've had six different quarterbacks take a snap. And they lost by 7. They had a chance in the second half, like multiple times, to go down and tie the game. They couldn't do it because Mangum was hurt. So they were fighting. They were trying. And then they obviously went on the road with their, he went in as the fifth string. He was going to redshirt this year. His name's Critchlow. He was supposed to redshirt. He's the fifth string on the depth chart. And he was started at UNLV. And they won by 10. And the big thing for me there, I was at the game, but Matt Canada, who's also been injured and in and out of the lineup, he was like their main horse at running back who'd been hobbled just for so long. He rushed for over 200 yards on 24, 25 carries. He finally looked like this Matt Canada guy, like this running back everyone was talking about before the year that was going to destroy teams. And so against UMass at home after that game, and Critchlow is actually kind of a running quarterback himself. He doesn't throw the ball great. So you'd think they'd be able to, you know, the problem is that they were really conservative. They didn't want Critchlow to get hurt because all their other quarterbacks have gotten hurt this season. But, I mean, he can run with his legs. I thought their run game was really cemented in that UNLV game, that they would be able to run on UMass, which they couldn't do. I mean, they had 3 points for 59 minutes. They finally scored a touchdown. They only lost by 6. I mean, their defense was fine and solid. And you have to give a lot of credit to what UMass has done the last 6 weeks. They've been a really, really good football team. But it's disappointing. So now you're looking at – I think you come down to the same question then. Is this a business trip? Well, it is for the coaches because there's at least, in my opinion, the offensive coordinator, Ty Detmer, he's got to be fired. I don't know, maybe Kalani Sitake too, a head coach. I'm not sure that's going to be the case, but someone's going to be a scapegoat. At the very least, I think it's the offensive coordinator. But you're going to try to coach for your life here and your job. The kids probably don't care because, I mean, probably don't even like the coaches at this point. They can't win. They can't score points. They're going to Hawaii. Some of them probably graduating. Some of them are just younger and maybe kids. It's a really weird spot. I would, if anything, just back Hawaii. But at the same time, what's Hawaii playing for other than there's their home closer for the season? I'm not sure you can really find a super edge in this game. And BYU is supposed to be a favorite numbers-wise. But when it's all said and done, it's a really sick spot. And it's one that you'd be more confident they'd respond well in if Tanner Mangum, you know, like you asked me before the San Jose State game, well, now he's gone and you're starting a fifth stringer. It literally is the fifth string quarterback. Now it's his third start, but I mean, that's how bad and how depleted they are. And so it's Hawaii or nothing, I think.
Well, Cheetah, I appreciate your patience today. I know we had a lot of difficulties recording this. And again, I hope the playback is serviceable. And I do apologize to our listeners for all the issues we've had here so far this week, but you got a lot of stuff going on, man. Wager Talk, podcast, you, whatever you want to plug here, feel free.
Sure. I appreciate it. I'm doing the podcast you stuff is, yeah, I do all of my game breakdowns there, podcastu.vegas. If you're interested in the actual bets that I'm sending out every week, every day, really, with hoops going, college and NBA, you can go to Wager Talk for those. And yeah, if you're interested in calling in and asking me questions personally, you can do that Mondays at 6:30 8:30 Eastern, 702-364-1100. And I'll tweet the actual phone number before. But it's a call-in podcast that I do, and then I post it an hour after, and people can listen back. And it's pretty cool. You get some really actually pretty smart questions, I think, more often than not, and get to talk and break down a lot of the games. And this should be a good week for it. So, yeah, I appreciate it, Adam, for having me on as usual. And hopefully this recording worked out, but it's not the end of the world either way. You're doing a good job over there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And safe travels to you, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
Likewise. You take care.
Good stuff there on today's show with Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com and also PodcastU.Vegas. Hopefully, these problems will be behind us on Wednesday when we welcome Brian Leonard back to the show and also Wes Reynolds for our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. We're going to try to get as much done here for Thursday and Friday as we possibly can. Westgate Super Contest Selection segment will record Wednesday night with Wes Reynolds, so he'll join me for that. Should hear from Brent from DSI Sportsbook. If I don't record with him on Thursday, he'll send me a list of games and some comments and thoughts, so I'll be able to talk about those for Friday's show. Hoping to also pre-record with Brad Powers or Rolf Michaels or both heading into the Thanksgiving holiday, so we'll do everything we can to bring in the show here. I know this has been frustrating for you. You can only imagine how frustrating it's been for me here with the first 2 days of the show. So I apologize for all of the problems that we have had here so far, but we're doing everything we can to still bring you the shows, and hopefully you can give us a bit of a pass for that. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.